This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman with Aaron Maté.
President Obama is meeting with Mexican President Enrique Peña Nieto at the White House today. The two leaders will reportedly focus on expanding dialogue and cooperation on economic security and social issues. However, human rights groups want Obama to press the Mexican government on its failure to investigate and prosecute abuses by state security forces. Two recent atrocities have drawn international media attention and sparked large-scale protests in Mexico. The first was the killing of 22 people by soldiers in Tlatlaya, Mexico State, in June. The second was the disappearance of 43 students in Iguala, Guerrero, in September. Since 2007, the U.S. has provided Mexico with more than $2 billion in funding through the Merida Initiative, a joint U.S.-Mexico effort to combat organized crime. 15% of that aid is supposed to be contingent on Mexico meeting human rights guarantees. But President Obama has signaled he won't push Peña Nieto on the issue.
Meanwhile, an explosive new investigative report out of Mexico says federal authorities were involved in the disappearance and killing of the 43 students. The report was published in the Mexican magazine Proceso and is called Iguala, the unofficial story. It directly contradicts Mexican government claims they were unaware of what happened. According to the report, federal authorities likely tortured key witnesses who offered critical testimony for an investigation by the Mexican Attorney General's office into the disappearances. For more, we go to Berkeley, California, where we're joined by the authors of the exposé, Anabel Hernandez and Steve Fisher. They're both fellows at the investigative reporting program at UC Berkeley Graduate School of Journalism. Anabel Hernandez is a Mexican investigative reporter who was awarded the 2012 Golden Pen of Freedom Award. Her latest book, Narcoland, The Mexican Drug Lords and Their Godfathers, was recently published in English. We welcome you both to Democracy Now! Anabel, you're really in exile here in the United States, fearing for your life in Mexico. Talk about this explosive expose on who you believe is involved in the missing students, in the case of the missing students.
Hi, good morning. Well, as you know, the official story is that the attack against the students and the disappearance of the 43 students just were involved the local government, the Mayor Abarca and his local police. But what we found in documents, testimonies, and also in a video is that the federal police and the federal government was also involved, not just in the attack, but also the federal government was monitoring the students since they left to Ayotzinapa. That shows that the attack was planned, wasn't an accident, wasn't something casual, was very, very planned.
Anabel Hernandez, at one point, your report is accompanied by a short compilation of videos that students took on their cell phones the night of the attack. At one point, voices in the footage shout, "Don't shoot," and "Get down," in Spanish. Toward the end of the video, the students quietly talk to each other, saying the police are leaving. The federal police are going to stay. They're going to hassle us. Let's go to part of that video compilation.
Don't shoot. Don't shoot. Careful. Careful. They already killed one. Call the ambulance. Call the ambulance. The police are leaving. The federal police are going to stay. They're going to hassle us. Why did they shoot? Why did they shoot?
It is chilling, Anabel Hernandez. Can you describe what happened, what you understand happened on that night of September 26th last year?
Well, what happened was that at 6 p.m., the students left the school in Ayotzinapa to go to the road between Chilpancingo and Iguala to kidnap some buses to go to Mexico City on October 2. And then when they arrived to very near to Iguala, the federal police was waiting for them and were monitoring them. So then they went to the bus station to take some buses, and at the end of the day were five buses. In two buses, the students take one way, and in other three buses, the students took another way. So the federal police and the municipal police attacked to the students, to the three buses in the middle of the city of Iguala. Wasn't true, the version of the federal government, that in that moment the mayor Abarca and his wife was in a political meeting in that moment in downtown. That was false. What we found is that the political event already finished 2 hours before the attack. So when the students cross through the downtown in Iguala, the Abarca and his wife didn't was there. So at the end of the street, the municipal police closed the road, stopped the three buses, and in the back, the federal police arrived in the moment of the attack, were the two policies. But now the federal government, the official government, just accused to the municipal police and have been hiding the participation of the federal police.
Anabel, as we said, you are alleging complicity at a very high level, and it contradicts the official Mexican government story. What evidence do you have aside from this video that we just saw? What are you basing this report on?
We have access to the investigation that make the government of Guerrero. We have access to all the files. I mean, the first testimonies that the students gave to the authorities just few hours after the attack. I mean, the very fresh testimonies. In these testimonies, the students very clear said that the federal police participate in attack. Also, we have access to the criminal file of the Attorney General office. And in this file, you can see all the contradictions, but also you can see how the government tortured to the most important witness to build the official version, to create the official version. And also, we have testimonies of the people that was in that street when the attack happened. I mean, we went to Iguala, we talked with many people, because in this street where the attack occurred, exist many business, local business, you know, pharmacy, drugstores, restaurants, bars, that kind of business. And we were neighbors, many neighbors, and we were able to talk with these people and with the students about what really happened that night.
Steve Fisher, you did the report along with Anabel Hernandez. Explain further what we just saw and heard in this video, and then what happened to the witnesses, how you know that eyewitnesses were tortured.
So what you see in the video, in addition to what you mentioned, Amy, where they speak of the federal police likely to harass the students. In addition, further on in the video, they're yelling at the police. And in the video, it's important to note, you don't see the police clearly, but they're essentially yelling at them, saying, why are you picking up the gun shells? What, you know what you've done. You know that you're guilty. Why are you picking up these gun shells? And I think that further shows the efforts of the police that night to cover up exactly what they did. In regards to the witnesses that were tortured. We have the medical examinations of these witnesses that show that there were severe beatings, brutal beatings, including electric shocks to various parts of the body. And then we also have the documentation of these same witnesses denouncing this torture prior to their testimony. And it should be noted that the officials that tortured these individuals were the Marines, the military, and the federal police.
And Annabelle, the motive in your view for this attack, these students were from a very politically engaged school. Was that a factor in why you think they were targeted?
Well, you have to really understand what is the meaning of this school. This school, from this school, one of the members of this school in the decade of the 60s was Lucio Cabañas. And as you know, Lucio Cabañas was a member of a guerrilla in Mexico. And these students still having that spirit in Mexico. If you went to the school and if you get in their circle, you can see that these students really believe that in this kind of protest, you know. And is this attack against them it wasn't the first. The federal police have been threatened to these students by several years. In December of 2011, the students closed the road between Mexico and Acapulco. The federal police arrived. I just started to shoot them. And the federal police killed two students. The National Commission of Human Rights proved that after the attack on December of 2011, the federal police took some students, tortured them, bite them, hit them, and to make them confess that they was the responsibility, that they had the responsibility in the murder of his colleagues.
Annabelle, we have less than a minute to go, and I want to ask, in today's meeting between the Mexican president, Peña Nieto, and Obama in Washington, what do you want to see happen? We'll start with Annabelle and then to Steve. You each have 15 seconds.
It's important to consider that in these last 4 years since the Plan Mérida was signed, the money of the government of U.S. have been empowering this federal police, the militias, and also the Marines that really don't want to respect the human rights in Mexico and abuse of their force against the society. So I think that the U.S. government have to ask about this.
And Steve, 10 seconds.
I believe that it's clear that the Attorney General and the President of Mexico are unable to bring this case and bring justice for the families. And I believe today when President Peña Nieto meets with Obama, I believe it's important for Obama to encourage and insist on an open investigation along with the international community.
We want to thank you both for being with us. Annabelle Hernandez, Steve Fisher, co-author of the new investigation, Iguala, The Unofficial Story. We'll link to the report at democracynow.org. That does it for the show. I'm Amy Goodman with Aaron Mate. Thanks so much for joining us.
This is Donna with your WUSB Concert Billboard. Your Concert Billboard for Wednesday, January 7th. Nina Etc. will be at that meatball place in Patchogue. 6:30. KJ Dinner will be at the 55 Bar, Manhattan at 7. BBQ in Patchogue welcomes Sweet Susie and Sugarfix. Madeline Perot Trio will be at City Winery, Manhattan, at 8. The Well-Tempered Quartet will be at Smalls Jazz Club, Manhattan, 9:30. Your concert billboard for Thursday, January 8th. John Zaro with Kira Valella will be at the Patchogue Theater, 7:30. The Devil Makes Three will be at Irving Plaza, Future Islands will be at Terminal 5, Manhattan, 8 p.m. Memphis Crawl will be at The Space in Westbury.
If you hear some musician on WUSB, you'll hear where they're playing locally on Concert Billboard. Arenas, bars, coffee houses, or outdoor festivals. They're all here at WUSB.FM/CBB and 90.1 FM WUSB Stony Brook, New York.
And a very good evening to everybody. The program is Off the Wall. Manuel Goldstein here, joined by Kyle.
Hi, how's it going?
You expect an answer from our listeners?
Yes.
Well, you know what? Listeners, we do want to know how you are. OTW at 2600.com. You never write, you never call. We want to know what's going on. Of course, it'll take us a while to read it because we're not actually here tonight in the studio. We are on tape. It is January 6th, we know that. Wow. Boy, isn't the weather something? What a week, you know, for 2015.
Yeah, it's a pretty rough start to a new year, but I think, you know, given what has happened, we'll be able to get through this. I mean, just like 4 weeks ago, we had all kinds of, you know, riots and protests, and now with this, I'm uncertain, I'm fearful, but I think like everybody else, I just want to get through it. And I think this year, as hard as it's been to this start, we'll get through and we'll find something better.
Yeah. You're referring to the weather, I assume.
Oh, yeah, that too, yeah.
Okay. Well, yeah, it's January 6th, although it's not January 6th where we are right now. Okay, for a few things we have to explain. You might have expected to hear the second Audubon show, because last week you heard the first Audubon show. That's where Kyle and I were basically lying down on the highway in Germany.
And wouldn't it make sense to do them one after the other so you didn't have to kind of remember and it didn't have a disconnect and you know, chronology and everything is important, and it would only seem right that after the first one you'd hear the second one, you wouldn't have some kind of silly gap, right?
That's good logic. It is. It's the kind of logic I subscribe to. But my subscription lapsed to that logic because somebody decided that it would be a good idea for the Stony Brook men's basketball team to travel to Columbia tonight and play a basketball game, which means that our show is only 45 minutes long, and part two of the the series on the Autobahn, part two, is an hour. So we would either have to cut 15 minutes from that, and we know that's not going to fly with our listeners, or we simply postpone that for another week and do something else in the interim. Of course, that left us with, what are we going to do? Because we have a, you know, we're not here right now. We're over in Europe, and we have... we can't put our Portugal show in the middle of two Germany shows. That wouldn't make any
Couldn't
sense.
Possibly. No. And all facetiousism aside, that logic trumps the prior logic of sequential airing and stuff. So I'm sure everyone now understands. Glad we cleared that up.
But we figured all this out sometime in late December, right before we left, actually. So we said to ourselves, Kyle, Emmanuel, what would be the worst possible place for you to go to before Christmas and hang out for 45 minutes to record a radio show? And Kyle, you came up with a brilliant suggestion to go to the mall.
Yeah. Why, you know, it made perfect sense. It's probably a little weird now. After the new year, everybody's thinking about maybe winter stuff and spring, but right this very moment, it's about presence, and I hope between now and the airing that all the good boys and maybe some of the girls got what they wanted for Christmas, and in a large part that's due to the actions of folks in a place like this, which is the mall. Yeah.
Wow. I've never heard a mall justified so well. But, it's now that you're listening to this, it's January, and probably there aren't as many people running around screaming in the mall. We're actually right next to some kids section where a bunch of kids are running around. So, I don't know. We might hear a tantrum. We might hear all sorts of things. We moved away from the Santa district. There's the section where everybody's waiting online to see Santa Claus. We were going to record over there, but we just thought that might get a little out of control. It might look a little weird. We might actually wind up in the line ourselves, and that would be awkward.
Yeah, and it just seems like everybody's waiting there, and Santa's looking a little beleaguered. He's probably been at it for weeks, and the kids seem to be getting heavier and heavier. He's probably got several knee replacements lined up by now. And, it's nice to kind of get to a little bit of a quieter section. It is a zoo out in the parking area. You've got all kinds of last-minute stuff going on. The mall itself is kind of disheveled. The screens aren't displaying anything. I like that. It's insanity, but I'm just seeing snow on all the monitors, and it's kind of like mayhem. I think this is really the most chaotic, and I think that's great. You know, to thrust ourselves into the epoch of the holiday season in America. And go to an institution like this where we can see just the sheer insanity that is consumerism, the familial obligation to buy all kinds of horse crap for everyone, to show how much you regret not caring about them normally during the year. All of those things really culminate during this season. And I'm just proud to observe and share the spirit of observing that tradition in our country.
Well, you know, it's rare that I even come into this mall, and definitely not during the holiday season. I haven't bought a single thing in a mall, I think, this entire year, although I do have to pick up some calendars, so I think I might get those here. But that's it. You know, I don't spend a lot of time here. It's interesting because this is my local mall, Smith Haven Mall, which is on half of it's in Smithtown, half of it's in Brookhaven. That's kind of interesting, a little bit of trivia, which is why it's called Smith Haven Mall. And I remember when I was a little kid, this place was fairly new. You had Macy's on one end, you had A&S on the other end. And it's, you know, I've seen it get rebuilt and redesigned and remodeled a couple of times.
Yeah.
And it's still the same damn mall, though. The floor is different, the walls are different, the people are pretty much the same.
And it doesn't lose that, like, mall seediness or, like, the... I mean, as nice as they want to make it, they can put all the tile they want and all the wood trim and painting and all this
modern, you know, I don't know. It's almost Northwest contemporary. I'm seeing so much wood, and it's, I mean, I look up in the rafters and it's like, wow, you know, that's a Frank Lloyd Wright-esque almost. With all
I didn't even see that. Yeah, there's a window there with wooden frames.
Yeah, no, it's really, that's totally like Frank Lloyd Wright, you know, the wood beams as a decorative lattice and stuff.
I think Frank Lloyd Wright would chase after you with an axe to even be hinted at that he would have anything to do with something that's inside a mall.
Yeah, he'd probably want to run one right down my spine. But in any event, I identify... I have a local mall where I'm from, but I'm as eager to visit yours.
You have a mall,
yours.
Too.
Yeah, there is a mall in Seattle. It used to be called, it's south of Seattle. It's in Tukwil. It used to be called South Center, but now it's Westfield because a major conglomerate bought them. And, in fact, I believe Smith Haven is run and operated by Westfield as well.
So they're cousins, basically. They're owned by the same people.
Actually, Smith Haven might not be a... No, it's a Simon Mall. I can see. It says Smith Haven Mall, a Simon Mall. So another conglomerate runs Smith Haven.
Why don't they just call it Simon Mall? That's kind of a funny name. It sounds like the name of a detective or something.
Yeah.
Wow. Well, you know, we've been to malls throughout the world. Remember the one in London we were in? That was a kind of a nice-looking mall. The Olympic Mall, I believe.
Yes, and that was actually a Westfield structure.
I can't believe you remember all the people that own, all the companies that own malls. I didn't even think that anyone owned a mall. I thought the mall just was.
Honey, I grew up with branding. It's not something I'm afraid of. And, I mean, it's the same reason I'm, you know, sick of all the girl talk and stuff. I grew up with multiculturalism. I'm, you know, I think that, you know, equality comes back around if you focus too much on one group and, you know, raising them up. You start... you know, hurting other people, and I'm very familiar with brands and both the positive and negative impact, and I think we worship them on the one hand in this country, but we also can be very, very critical of them, and I'm both ways, you know. I'm understanding, and I understand there's problems with commercial and large corporations and this consumption attributes of our society. There's also really virtuous things that private entities can do. None of which is represented in a mall, but be that as it may, it's all interesting to me, and I'm critical, you know. But at the same time, I appreciate it in kind of a kitsch way, I guess, or I don't know, semi-traditional. I don't know. I lost my train of thought. I don't know what we're talking about.
We're talking about malls. It's our mall show because we don't do enough of those. And if you have a Simon Mall near you, we'd like to hear from you, because I just learned that the Smith Haven Mall is a Simon Mall. Now I want to go to all the malls and see who owns different ones. You know, we have a few on Long Island, but it's simply another level, you know. It's a conglomerate of different malls throughout the world. I've been to malls in China, and they're kind of crazy. They're a lot bigger than this. This is only one level. And that's kind of surprising, because most malls that you go to these days have at least two levels. This one is pretty much the same as it was. They've expanded a bit. I remember there used to be a theater in this mall, like out by where the food court is now. The food court wasn't there. That used to be the parking lot. They expanded. But I'm also thinking about things that existed when I was growing up that no longer exist. Like, for instance, record stores. Yeah, there's no record store here anymore. There used to be a Sam Goody. Not here.
B. Dalton Books.
There used to be bookstores. No bookstores anymore. What else? Well, certain department stores have changed names and things like that. But, you've definitely seen some kind of staggering changes as far as what people are shopping for. There's a big Apple store here somewhere. I don't know exactly where.
Oh, I do not doubt that. I'm sure there's an Apple store, of course.
That would have been fun to record in.
Yeah. If I thought about it, I'm sure. Yeah, I'm sure we could have made that fun. It's real. I don't see that many changes, though. I mean, I know what you're saying. I know what you're getting at, but it's a lot of the same. I mean, I'm not seeing some dying industry like, you know, oh, gosh, I can't get Polaroid here or whatever.
Well, good luck finding film.
Okay, there you go. There's no camera stores, and I bet you cannot develop color film here.
Or buy it, or even see it. There's no record stores, no bookstores. It's just things change, and all of a sudden we're like buying different things, and it's just kind of weird. But yeah, you're right. The mall is the same. It's the same basic mentality, same screaming kids. It's a little bit brighter, a little bit more electronic-y.
I guess a lot of those mediums, like you mentioned record stores, those have gone online, and so what I guess we might notice more than the absence of some things, because it's obvious, yeah, it's online, it's this or that, it's an app, whatever. What has filled those gaps, those empty spots? What can we infer about the void that had to be filled, and what kinds of businesses then do we end up with? That's really, I think, the intriguing thing.
Well, that is kind of interesting. What replaced them? More shoe stores? More clothing stores? I mean, I think that's exactly what did replace them. But how is it that these places are able to continue existing in the age of electronic shopping? Everyone comes out here.
Right, and Amazon, a lot of these companies, Mace, department stores, shoe stores, a lot of them, you can get all of their stuff online anyway. So by having a retail store, obviously, yeah, they can bring in people that are just walking, ambling through, not browsing. It's a totally different thing than being online, but it's expected that they all have a presence there. So that, in addition to entities that are solely online, like your major online retailers starting with a letter A, all of these kinds of things, who don't have a physical presence, they don't seem to be putting a lot of these businesses out either. Yeah. So as much as that's popular and convenient and in vogue, this seems to still have a place. And even though a lot of the kind of types of stores have transitioned and moved around and shifted a bit, it still has a place as a venue to walk through and serves a purpose for browsing and doing several different types of shopping in the physical sense, and maybe getting deals, maybe actually walking away with it that day, not paying shipping. These kinds of things, I guess, are all motivating factors. And then whatever social anything you possibly could get out of it. No, that just hurts to say, but.
Well, I think social is definitely a key to it, because people come here to mingle, and that's what you see. You know, a lot of kids come to the mall because that's the place that you hang out. But it's also gotten a lot more spread out, because surrounding the mall are now strip malls and all kinds of other things. So it just keeps expanding. It's kind of weird.
Yeah, they have all these micro kind of malls around, and it's just we're really surrounded by it, and to come to a mall, you're in an island of just that. But I do think that families enjoy it, because you know, you can eat a little bit, you can, as you said, you got kids having fun just running around. It's a safe place, right? And it is something you can share, and it's easier. I think it would be very hard if you had a small child or, you know, other people in your family to just crowd around a computer or look on a phone. That's a totally different shopping experience, and I think that's actually something that malls might historically have as a virtuous thing that we would be remiss to lose, right? I mean,
I'm willing to give it a try. I mean, why not? It's, malls, I just don't like them. There's something about being enclosed and having all these, like, you know, things being hawked at you, pressure, you know, and just, it's been here so long, it's been here throughout my life, I just kind of like to be away from this kind of confined atmosphere.
So perhaps if we had better cities where you could walk and shop, and it wasn't about strip malls at all, it was that our cities were, well, you know, built and interesting enough that businesses open in all of the normal places, but our suburban cities tend to be really single level and boring.
Yeah.
And horribly built. I mean, built with sticks and paper.
And without mass transit in mind, so that people have to drive everywhere. And that's sort of, you know, it's a reminder, because I grew up without a car when I was a kid. I was like, the only person in my neighborhood that had no car. And, of course, I couldn't go to the mall, but then everybody else did. And you kind of felt left out as a result of that, even though when you look back on it later, you realize it wasn't that much to be left out of. But still, as a kid, it means a lot more.
Yeah, and you could really just hang out and loiter and not really have supervision and not be questioned by any of the businesses or other authorities in the mall. So I could see that as a bit of freedom that you were yearning for at that age. I know it was probably something I enjoyed, I although it became more utilitarian than anything, and then I later just avoided altogether, much in the way you described.
Well, it's a trip down memory lane, I suppose, and just also a hub of activity for us here right before the Christmas holiday. Again, we are coming to you on Off the Wall, being broadcast on January 6th, but we're recording this in late December, and as a result of the basketball game coming up, which we have only 45 minutes of a show today to present. And also, you know, speaking of sports, we didn't mention this. It's the first time we didn't mention it, and it's kind of hard for us to mention it this time. But we've been following the FA Cup since August.
Yes.
And the third round proper took place last Saturday. And the team that we are following happens to be the lowest ranked of the 64 teams that played last weekend. Blythe Spartans, I believe, in the 7th division. And last weekend, the first two divisions finally joined in the competition. So basically you had Blythe Spartans, who have been playing from the beginning since August, and now finally the big teams are joining in. And obviously we don't know what happened, because it hasn't happened yet in our world. So Blythe Spartans was supposed to meet Birmingham, who are from the second division, and they probably got slaughtered, even though they're playing on home turf. But you know what? I'm going to predict that Blythe Spartans only lost 2-1. Who knows? If they pulled out a victory, then you probably have already heard about it. It's that big a news item if that happened. Kyle, do you want to maybe predict anything? Or
no.
No, that's probably the safest way to
go
about it, I guess.
I'm pretty familiar, and at this stage, it's really, you could be aligning yourselves, and I have too much other turmoil in my life. I don't want to commit and be in one camp, and then, I mean, if I visit, invariably it'll come up. I just don't want to be put in that position. I know you understand.
Of course, you are the one who started this whole thing by picking Nunnington Griff back in August, and we've been following every team that has won the competition since then, and that brought us up to, coincidentally, the very lowest-ranked team in the entire tournament, which I think is awesome. Look it up. Go to the FA Cup. Find it. Find the results for last weekend and see what happened with Blythe Spartans and Birmingham, and I'm sure it'll be very interesting. Of course, we'll bring results as to whoever won that game in the next round. I think the fourth round proper is what they call that one, so that little bit of housekeeping there. And, of course, next week we will have the conclusion of our trip to Germany and the Autobahn. And I think in the next episode we're actually driving in the car.
Yeah, I think it was the time when we took the wheel by both hands and saddled up to that old A-whatever. Every highway is A, and then a number, A51, A5, A, and Autobahn, right, A.
A stands for Autobahn.
Yeah, that's how it works. Anyway, so we saddled up to that A5 or whatever it was, and then we put that pedal right to the floor.
Yeah, and literally did that until we just couldn't go any faster. And I guess, you know, you could say, oh, you guys only made it up to this number of kilometers an hour. You know, I've gone faster, but, you know, the car only went that fast. So we went as fast as the car could possibly go without it, like, going down a cliff or something. So I'm proud of what we did.
Yeah, we would have definitely gone faster if we had the ability and felt safe enough. But that thing got up. It was pretty dang quick. And for a little economy car, an American one for European export, obviously.
It was a Ford Fiesta?
Yeah, it was a Ford. Really impressed us. We were, you know, a little pride, you know, a little American car kind of hurling ourselves along. And, boy, it was interesting. It definitely, I felt good. I felt responsible and in control and, a little bit more adult there in Germany, where in the U.S., 60 is dangerous.
Well, you know, you're treated more like an adult up there, so that's why you feel more like one.
Yeah.
I think that goes for a lot of things. And when you travel around in different parts of the world, you see how people are treated differently, how they treat others differently, and that does reflect on who you become.
Yeah, and it was cool to just try it, right? I'd heard about it, I'd never actually ridden on the Autobahn, I got to ride on it and drive on it, and it was just the sense of like, well, you know, I could do this, you know, I'm allowed in this particular context, and as a visitor, I think I should check it out. And by bringing that back here, I'm not saying an expectation we should change things here, but at least I bring that to my driving here and to my understanding of other things. And I think it applies. I think it applies to a lot of things that, you know, when there are speed limits, yeah, sometimes you can go a little faster, a little slower, and when there aren't guidelines like that, it's really up to you. And it's that confidence in your judgment that I think we should have a bit more of and feel freer to exercise in this country.
Yeah, and that goes to all sorts of different levels. The way you're treated in school, the way you're treated driving down a highway, the way you're treated on the internet, in every aspect of life. You need to be treated as somebody who has some ability to make their own decisions, and respect that person when they disagree, and not talk down to them. If you treat people like criminals, they will act like criminals. Treat people like children, they will act like children. Of course, behind us, they are treating people like children because, well, they are, and they're running around jumping. What are they doing back there?
Actually, they look fairly organized and probably more adult than a lot of children around. I don't know.
Really? Are they organizing against us?
They seem to have some kind of game going. There's a lot of chasing and tagging. But it definitely has rules, and they're enjoying themselves. That's the important part.
What's cool is if you stick kids in a pen like this anywhere, the rules will just suddenly come about. Games will emerge, and there will be rules. There's nobody telling them this is how it's done. They just and language is even an issue. Somehow, we've seen this before. They just organize. It's a little bit scary, actually.
Yeah, and there's no. I love seeing that the inhibitions. There's no social constructions or perceptions or ingrained self-consciousness in any of them. They're all open and accepting the getting together of the group and being with one another for the sake of that alone. There's no exigence, there's no prerogative, there's no rules that, you know, well, you're a certain type of kid. No, all kids can participate, and that's kind of inspiring.
Yeah, it really is. And it's funny because they're probably never going to see these other kids again. They're just basically, you know, joining them for this hour or two of playing around, and then they're off to wherever their family takes them, and who knows who they'll see next time.
No, actually, I've seen them exchanging Twitter account names and stuff, so I think they'll probably all be on LinkedIn and stuff later.
Well, yeah, look at that. They're beaming from one BlackBerry to the other, and
yeah, they just touch the phones like that. It's weird.
Used to be when I was a kid, they would give out business cards, but that's a time long past.
Yep.
Well, so we, as we mentioned a couple of times, we're sitting here in this mall in late December, but as you're listening to this, we are actually overseas. What do you think we'll be on January 6th?
Oh, I just want to let everyone know that the Cinnabon store,
Cinnabon is, you can say the name.
Frosting covered pastries. They've just rolled out a piece of dough, and there is a large piece of butter on it. They're prepping for the next round of cinnamon flavored buns. So I just want everybody to know that's under control. He's now smearing the butter, and we will have several pounds of cinnamon buns ready for everyone very shortly here.
Well, that's really disgusting. I didn't know we were going to do a play-by-play of the things that are going on around us, because there's all sorts of activities, people wheeling their kids around and people buying shoes. I saw that.
I kind of puked a little saying that, but...
Well, I'm sure we all did. But as I was mentioning, yes. So where do you think we are today, January 6th, 2015? It's 2015, Kyle. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year, indeed. Where do you think we are?
Yeah, because, well, we were in Germany for the CCC Congress.
Sure.
Or the Chaos Communication Congress. I said an extra Congress. And that was pretty good, wasn't it?
Oh, I'm always inspired, always impressed. I love the new space. It's got a lot of interesting features, a lot of things we might be able to use for some of our projects and events. Really impressed. Network was great as always.
Met so many cool people. My God, I can't believe how many people came up to us and said, "You guys are the coolest, and it's so awesome to meet you, and this is like the highlight of my life." So many people said that, and wow, I'm blown away. So thank you, everybody at CCC who did that.
Yeah, and that was just the half of it. I mean, the other half we can't even talk about. So, yeah, it's a success as usual, and well, I think we're excited to be on the road, and I think where we are right now is in the south of Germany somewhere.
Oh, you think we went to the south of Germany? I was going to say we probably went to the north of Sweden. So, you know, it's in Europe, there's all kinds of places you can wind up. You can be in the east, the west, the south, the north, and it's all different.
Well, I know we have business in that area, but I'm not sure, you know, it could change. Yeah, maybe we'll be in Sweden or Norway or something like that. Who's to say, really?
Not us, because we're in the past. You know, you probably have a better idea where we are right now, listeners, than we do.
Yeah, but, I mean, let's not discourage people to listen to us from the past. We have a lot of us from the past hosted on the website. We wouldn't want any of those us from the past being relegated to obscurity or being made to feel as though they're not relevant or they're too old. You know, they have their place. Mm-hmm. So I think we're as entitled to speak with authority and for us to have this audience. Thank you, audience. We're as relevant, even though we're in the past. You know, I'm sure you know where we are. That's fine. Shout it at the radio again. That's fine. But, you know, here we are. We're telling you what we think and what we're getting ready for. And we're in the epicenter of culture.
In the mall. Well, you mean just
yeah,
in life?
That goes without saying.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. No, I agree. And
all
you know,
from the epicenter.
Well, you know, me from the past actually is a whole lot more popular and cool than me of the present, and definitely me of the future. I've heard that said many times. So I hear the points that you're making about not discounting those shows from the past or us now. Well, now we're in the past here, but we're playing in the present. Okay, but the point is, where we are now, you know, you can find out where we are now by listening to Off the Hook tomorrow, assuming we're not preempted, and we'll probably be broadcasting live from there. So there you go.
Yeah, we'll probably call in. I don't know if this, I don't know what the state of the station is. I don't know what connection or how we'll do it. But yeah, there's probably a lot more information and a lot of news and updates from the event and some of the events that happened last month and just a lot of coalescing of info. And you'll definitely find out where we're at then too. So
yeah, hey, the sports guys are here. They're getting ready for their show in a few minutes. So
yeah, they're a little breathy.
Well, yeah, well, they have to set up. You know, there's a lot of patch cords you have to put in and things like that. And it's you know, it's a game from far off Colombia.
Puffing and puffing and
no, those are the players. The players are going to do that.
But, oh, they've already got. Okay. Sorry,
it's going to be an exciting game. So that starts at 6:45, and as you can see, it's getting ever closer, but it's not quite there yet. So let's not kick us out just now. Again, we'll be back next week with our other tape show that we taped in May of last year in Germany. But as we reach the conclusion here in Smith Haven Mall and. Late December of 2014, I guess I'm feeling a bit sentimental that we will soon be going to different malls and different cities and seeing different people doing basically the same thing. I don't know what else I can add to that other than it's that special time of year where everybody feels compelled to buy things go
imagine
nuts.
This is going on in other parts of this country and around the world in different languages, and that's really the only difference. And we are in other places. It's a lot of this, but in different dialects and different accents. And that's the one thing with travel. I mean, get out there, people. This world is getting smaller, and there is so much we have in common with other human beings. And at the same time, many differences. And let's become aware and celebrate those.
Yeah, but people are buying different things in different areas. Like when we're in Germany, walking through stores, I don't know. People just seem to be into different. I see a lot more excitement over electronics, for instance, in various department stores in Germany. At least I did last time I was there. Certainly in China, when you go to a mall there, they go bananas over latest phones. Of course, we do as well, but it just seems a little bit more frenetic over there. I remember in Spain when I was buying clothes, it just seemed different somehow. It's very hard to put into words. Subtle differences, but differences all the same.
Yeah, and I think it's in large part we take a lot of the variety we have in the market for consumer electronics very much for granted. We have a huge selection, so much that we all become sort of disillusioned and glazed over and then eventually just don't care. And in other places, they just have a couple things and they admire the things we develop, and it's hard to get them and they're expensive to import. And so thus, they do go a little bit crazy for those things. And I agree with you, yeah, like clothes shopping in a nice big city totally differs. The attitudes about trying things on or styles even, what a dress code is here might be just casual wear there. These kinds of things are all very interesting to see and experience.
And of course, the prices vary wildly from place to place.
Yeah. Yeah, imported stuff. It depends on where the stuff is made and proximities and these kinds of things.
Now, we should do a whole series just on malls. Like, every week we're in a different mall, and that would be the show. It's basically, off the mall. Oh, instead of off the wall.
Off the mall.
What do you think about that? I just came up with that idea.
Okay, let's do... That'll be a podcast. It'll be, like, straight to Zune. Your Zune player. No, I don't know. Sure. What station is going to play that?
What station isn't going to play that? But thinking about this, thinking about podcasts and thinking about all sorts of technology and developments and things like that, I'm just thinking about when I first went into a mall as a kid, what was possible and what was not. Podcasts, that wasn't even a word. Nobody had computers. Nobody had a cell phone. There was no such thing as a CD. People came to malls. They bought vinyl records. That was a big thing. Sam Goody was the big store here, and everybody would come and buy records. The clothing, there was still clothing, crazy fashions, of course.
I don't see but, any payphones.
You know what?
No payphones, obviously.
There used to be payphones, that's right. There are no payphones here anymore either. But it's just, the world has changed so much. But we were saying what?
Like credit cards?
Well, they had credit cards then.
Okay, how about this?
But they had to ka-chunk them,
Wireless credit cards?
No.
Oh, yeah.
No, they didn't even process them over the phone. Because they, they had to call, I guess, to do that, but there was no, data connection.
Of course, you'd have the carbon paper, and that's how you would have your credit card sent. Of course, they'd send it in a couple days later. That's how it works, and, very much an interesting development.
Well, just that alone. Just think about that. You would... If you bought something on a credit card, there was no magnetic strip on the back of the credit card. You hand it to the clerk. They would get that little ka-chunk machine. The raised lettering would be imprinted on carbon. And that is how they would one day or at one time submit all the sales. It's unrecognizable. That one part of the transaction that you would do in a mall 30 years ago, maybe.
It's not even a backup anymore. Right? If their machine's down, they don't sell anything, or they're cash only. They won't even use that or don't have it, unless it's a department store. And then that's the former. They don't use it. It's just, no sale.
Yeah. So a lot has changed. Things are faster. Things are more streamlined.
LEDs. I see LEDs. There's LEDs all in those light sockets.
In the past, we didn't have LEDs.
Those are LED floodlights.
So we'd use regular incandescent light bulbs.
Maybe it would be hotter.
We'd
be wasting more heat energy from our lights. I don't know. There's all kinds of those little... It's the details, I think, mostly. Because, again, as we said at the beginning, a lot has not changed about malls.
People have gotten bigger.
No,
have you noticed that?
Really
they have.
People here.
Well, they're around, but... Yeah, but I mean, in general, people have, and I think that's something. That's why the hallways are wider than they were in the past, and there's more food places.
Yeah, I think people are really—they understand the difference between real food and processed food. I think the message has gotten out.
Speaking of food, though, when this mall opened, there was no food court. and now there is. And I noticed they have a Thai place here, which that's new within the last, I think, year, although it's been a while since I've been in this place. But something like that would have been unthinkable anywhere, really. Basically, ethnic food back when I was growing up was Chinese, pretty much. That was it.
Neat.
Actually, yeah, kind of horrible. All right, well, listen, we're almost at the end, so any closing thoughts on the holiday season and malls and consumerism in general?
I hate it. Good riddance. Be happy if it never occurs again.
Well, thank you, Mr. Grinch. This has been a fascinating interview. We are prepared to leave now. There's nothing we have to... I might buy those calendars, though. That's the only thing I can think of to get in the mall. But after that, an hour and a half getting out of the parking lot, and we are free until the next time we have to do this.
Yay.
All right, this is Emmanuel for Off the Wall.
Whatever, bye.
And that was Kyle exuding the Christmas spirit. Write to us, otw@2600.com. Stay tuned for basketball, and next week we'll be back on the highway in Germany. Okay, we're going on to Columbia, and the men's basketball team is playing there, the Stony Brook Seawolves, and we got Jeff Bernstein and Kurt Hilton over there. And can you come in now?
Yep.
Yes, Jeff?
Yep. And thank you very much, Bob Longman. From Levin Gymnasium, right in the heart of New York City, uptown, if you will. Welcome to Stony Brook Seawolves basketball. Kurt Hilton, Jeff Bernstein here. Glad you could join us. Glad to bring it to you as the Seawolves take on Columbia in one of those rare out-of-conference home and away games. So,
are you sure this is out-of-conference? We've played them so many times.
Absolutely. It just seems like it. But they'll be seeking to exact a measure of revenge as the Seawolves in their opener beat Columbia by 1 point at the buzzer, a game that Columbia had looked to be in control of for most of it, but the Seawolves prevailed 57-56. Quite honestly, the Columbia Lions were stunned, and they look on their home gymnasium floor to right what they perceive to be a wrong. Two teams that have played very well to date. Columbia comes in with a 7-5 record. Their most recent game was a loss suffered to St. Francis of Brooklyn, 72-64. The Seawolves had a 10-point win over New Hampshire to open their conference play in the America East. And a game that the Seawolves started off fast, but then New Hampshire closed the distance, and then it was back and forth before the Seawolves opened it up and put it away. And as you look back at that game, Jeff, I thought it was impressive on a number of counts. Number one, New Hampshire, like I kind of said in the TV broadcast, this ain't your granddaddy's Wildcats anymore. They're pretty good. Bill Herrien has some good youth, young players, and you knew they were going to come out and play New Hampshire-style, Bill Herrien-style defense, but they had some punch offensively for the first time in a while.
Oh, I thought New Hampshire was very impressive in that game, and I thought they were actually better than they were last year, and they banged in double-digit three-pointers last year, double-digit three-pointers this year. I think New Hampshire is one of those teams that you don't want to play in the playoffs. That's the first thing we talked about. Who don't you want to play in the playoffs? That's one of the teams you don't want to play. Coach Herrien does a great job. And I think Stony Brook did a fabulous job, especially in the second half, really, really clamping down on New Hampshire, especially in the free throws, something that we have not seen the Seawolves do well this year. And they really hit some big free throws down the stretch, over 30 attempts from the free throw line. And I think this is a good test for Stony Brook. I think if they want to keep it going, show the America East, show the metro area that the Seawolves are a force in the area, come up with another win here against Columbia, who is a very, very good team. Took Kentucky down to the wire, played UConn down to the wire. They beat Hofstra here, and Hofstra is a very, very good team. So a good test for the Seawolves. You know, mathematically, it really doesn't do much for Stony Brook in terms of the America East, because as we talked about, it's a non-conference game. But it builds momentum because they're going to Vermont on Saturday, which is another huge test.
Absolutely. And just to put a cap on that New Hampshire game that Jeff talked about, well, Stony Brook shot 27 of 34 from the line overall, but they were 21 of 23 in the second half, and that's a 91% clip. They had started off 6 of 11. Junior Trey Purifoy made a career-high 10 free throws. The guy who actually holds the record for most free throws made in a game, he walked into the gym not long ago, Leon Brisport, and he made sure to remind us, Jeff, he still holds that record.
You're right. You
know, keeps close tabs on that.
It was good to see Leon also. Leon, I still consider one of the greatest players at Stony Brook.
Absolutely.
And he was one of the guys to launch the Division I era, and good to see him back.
Yes, sir. Sophomore Cam Mitchell, you know, he's been turning it on in the second half of his last two games against Washington. Of course, he had those 12 points, so clutch, 4 3-pointers, but then he followed that up with 9 points in the second half on Saturday, and that really keyed the Seawolves into breaking that game open, particularly his clutch corner three. But the guy you always talk about, Jameel Warney, he's Division I's leading rebounder. He collected his 5th America East Player of the Week honor and 3rd in as many weeks. The conference announced that just yesterday, and despite seeing consistent double teams, Warney notched his nation-leading 12th double-double on 22 points and 10 rebounds to lead the Seawolves past New Hampshire in that conference opener. He owns 5 of the 8 Player of the Week awards handed out by the conference this season, and he's got some help. Rayshon McGrew, who had a double-double himself on Saturday, he won the award in Week 1, meaning a Seawolf has earned the honor in 6 of the 8 weeks. So that's pretty impressive, Jeff.
Absolutely. The one player, Kurt, that I am concerned to see if he does play better today is Trey Purifoy. He has not shot well the last couple of games.
3 for 20 over the last two games.
He has not shot well, and I'm sure the coaching staff has pretty much made it an emphasis that he needs to play better and not have other players shoulder the load. And I'm sure tonight he's going to come out and make better decisions. I'm not sure if he's going to score a lot of points tonight, but I think he needs to just look to make some better decisions as well. And also, it's also a big night for our brethren over at Albany. They have the big game at New Hampshire tonight as well. And it'll be interesting to see how the Great Danes, who have been hampered by the flu bug, go up to New Hampshire.
Well, you had an opportunity, as you talk about the coaching staff, to talk to head coach Steve Peichel not long ago in preparation for tonight's game against Columbia.
moments before tonight's game between Stony Brook and Columbia. We're talking to the head men's basketball coach, Steve Peichel. And, Coach, before we talk Columbia, great way to start off the America East season with a victory against New Hampshire at home. Some thoughts on the victory.
I tell you, I'm a great crowd, first of all, excited. We've been good at home, and so we keep that streak intact. We wanted to start off 1-0, important to protect home court. New Hampshire was playing good basketball, one of their best non-conference, you know, records that they've had in a while. They were leading the league in points per game and defense, and you know, I thought we made some big plays down the stretch. We got through a lot of obstacles. Trey was in foul trouble right off the bat. You know, didn't shoot the ball particularly well all night and still figured out a way to win. So, you know, pleased to be 1-0, and now we have obviously a couple road trips here, a couple road games that are very difficult against real good teams, so we're going to have to play much better.
A little bit of a shift getting out of the conference today against Columbia and then going back to the conference. Any thoughts about, you know, going back and forth?
Well, I mean, you know, not ideal, but it is the schedule. And, you know, obviously playing a real good Columbia team who's been very, very good at home like us. So we've been well tested, too, with the schedule that they've played. So real challenging game, you know, have, you know, a lot of difficult things that we have to do tonight. Another team that, you know, runs the clock and holds the ball, and our defense has to be on point for the entire night.
Columbia is almost like a pseudo-conference game because most of the games that you played against Columbia pretty much go down in the last possession.
You know, every time we played them, it's been, you know, one of those kind of series that, you know, they always are close games and it always comes down last few possessions. So, you know, it's just been that way. They've been very well coached and they're a good basketball team with really, really good three-point shooters. So no matter what the score is, they're never too far out, you know, of the lead or too far out of a spurt that can kind of put the game away for them, too. So real, again, challenging team. They want to shoot 35 threes, you know, in that range in this game. We got to really protect three-point land, and they shoot great at home, too. So we have that going against us, too. But, you know, we have prepared. I think we've played a lot of teams that play similar style, and we played them the first game of the year. They're very different now. With some new players back in the lineup, and I like to think we've grown, too, since we first played them.
You mentioned the threes. What's some other concerns about the Lions that you'll face tonight?
Well, I mean, you face a lot of things. They're very efficient on offense. They have all guys capable of passing and you know, making threes. They have a big guy inside and another four-man that shoots the basketball from deep. They're real good defensively. I mean, we got to do a great job, again, rebounding because, you know, we don't want to be defending for 30 seconds and then give up an offensive rebound and have to defend for another 30. So there's going to be limited possession, so every possession is important, and we got to take care of the ball and not turn the ball over.
I'm sure you'll deal with it again tonight. Jameel's been so good. He's getting the doubled and triple team pretty much every game now.
You know, he really is, and, you know, everyone plays him differently. They've played a man-to-man in the post in the past. Again, if they double-team him, we'll be ready for it. If they triple-team him, we'll be ready for it. Nothing that they can do to Jameel that we haven't seen already. So that's one great part of the non-conference schedule, that we played so many different teams with so many different game plans to stop him. So, you know, looking forward to tonight. I think we're ready. I think we had a great our arguably maybe our best practice of the year yesterday. So, you know, we'll see what happens.
Best of luck tonight, Coach.
Thanks, Jeff.
Coach Steve Peichel talking with Jeff Bernstein moments ago in preparation for this game. And one of the things he touched on, Jeff, in his pregame remarks was just the passing, the different ways that Jameel Warney has been defended, but how he's responded, not just with his scoring, but the passing. 6 assists, the career high for him against Washington, and then another 3 against New Hampshire. And one of those 3 was a clutch skip pass that set up Cam Mitchell
right
for a 3 that really turned the tide in the game.
Yeah. Everyone sees the offense. You see the defense. But like you mentioned, there are other parts of the game. He needs to be a leader right now. He's a junior, and he's got to lead by example. And he's showing other parts of his game right now just by the leadership, just maybe by patting somebody on the side and say, hey, got to go here, got to go move there. And he's got to become a sort of a leader on the court in a lot of ways.
The other thing you talked about as well was just the need for Trey Purifoy to sort of get it going offensively.
Right.
He's been struggling 3 for the last 20, as I noted, against Washington and New Hampshire combined, and he's an important cog in this Stony Brook machine. I mean, you could argue his value is just as important as Jameel Warnie.
Well, I thought about this the last couple of days, and I said to myself, well, where was, you know, it may not be a great example, but, you know, Kurt, you can pretty much analyze as I do. I looked at Brian Duer and his career at this point, you know, as a junior, just coming up, and, you know, Brian may have been a little bit ahead of the curve, but not by much. You know, Brian had his issues as well, but did learn as he went. And Trey, I think, offensively, is not losing on the talent end of it. I just think his decision-making, if he makes better decisions, the points and the assists and the rebounds and all the other things will come if he makes better decisions. And, you know, still a young junior. You know, he's an all-conference player, but remember, still a young junior, and I think if he makes those better passes or the runs, you know, the offense that's efficient, I think all the other numbers will come.
Talking to the coaching staff, Jeff, and you talk about decision-making, one of the things they'd like to see an improvement on is he got into foul trouble again on Saturday, and that's what curtailed
right.
his playing time. But then he's got to learn to manage those fouls. So if you pick up 2 and they reinsert you in the first half and roll the dice, you have to manage not picking up that key third foul in the first half and really put yourself out of commission for extended minutes.
He has to trust himself. He tries too much at times to overextend himself, and he just has to let the game come to him. And he's that good of a player where it's all going to happen. I think at times he goes and tries too much, where he tries to do a lot of things, and that's where it hurts him and gets into foul trouble, or he may make a decision on the offense where he gets nothing out of it, either a score or a foul. He just has to trust himself, trust the system, and trust the rest of his players, and he'll be fine.
One of the big keys when you look at the Seawolves season to date and why they have the record that they have is their rebounding supremacy. Now, they had a 43-rebound effort against New Hampshire. That marked the 9th time this season that the Seawolves have grabbed at least 40 rebounds. Jeff, that's a big number.
Yeah, that is a big number. And I've always said, you get 30 free throw attempts, you get 30 rebounds, most likely you're going to win a game. You know, those are the numbers you're really looking for. And, you know, the rebounding was dominating. And I think one of the reasons that is you have Rayshon McGrew, who's been one of the most improved players since last year. You have guys like Sturdivant, who's been very, very good as a freshman. And the last couple of games, Jacob Petras has been good as well.
Very, very good. And, you know, Jeff, one of the things that they've also done, so many of those rebounds are offensive rebounds, which then translate into second chance points for them.
Absolutely, and I'm remiss to also add into Chris Braley. Chris Braley's been in the mix himself as well, and I think because you have so many players that could add the dimension of defense as well, that's why other teams, you know, have a hard time.
Seawolves have won 7 straight America East Conference openers. It's won at least 13 conference games in each of the last season, and 4 out of the last 5, of course, this a non-conference matchup, the final one of the 2014-2015. But the Seawolves are also looking to extend their 4-game winning streak, during which opponents are averaging only 54.3 points per game and shooting 75 for 205. Just wanted to give you the numbers. That's a 37% clip. This is a team here, Columbia, Jeff. They want to fire it up. They do want to slow the game down, but they're a 3-point-oriented team. They live and die on the perimeter.
Very, very good team, the Columbia Lions. It'll be interesting to see how Columbia faces Harvard in the Ivy League. Obviously, Harvard is the perennial power in the Ivy League. But I think this is the kind of Columbia team, if you treat them lightly, they can knock you off. So Columbia, once again, going to have another good year. Always good when Stony Brook and Columbia plays, Kurt. It's not the America East, but it's the Metro battle, which is, in our minds, always just as good.
Well, you can
get that local interest.
There's also a battle just in terms of, even if you look at the notes of the teams, Columbia says that Stony Brook took a 7-6 lead in the all-time series off the last win. The Stony Brook notes say that Stony Brook leads 9-6 all-time. Now we'll take a break for the national anthem.
Job on the-